Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. for 40-odd years, we come together to exchange ideas and teach each other things and remind each other of things. 38 years under the headmastership of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key 2 years ago. And I've been at the helm for 2 years, and once again, it's good to see you all back here. We try and do this every week and hopefully inform and entertain everyone. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual link. Okay. Can't reach me via this lovely radio here. You could do it via email. That would be either to offer questions if you couldn't reach the net itself. We call those mailbag questions. They were very popular once upon a time. Or if you have any topics that you would like to discuss or that you would like to hear discussed or that you would like to be part of a discussion about. Or if you have any puzzles for us. We love puzzles. We've used them recently. They're not very common. They're not very easy to mine. And occasionally I find one or two, and it's a thing of beauty. Sometimes it just kind of implodes. Someone has the answer within a fraction of a second, and we move on to something else. But sometimes, like last Sunday, we could roll a concept around for a while and learn all kinds of things. So if you have a puzzle to share, please email me at mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And if you have any questions that you'd like me to pass on to Paul from NASA or some space-related news, or you could email him directly. You can reach him at spacenetreport@gmail.com. Then I have links of all kinds of interesting articles and YouTube and such available on my link page. That's available 24/7. Just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. I'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's very active. The last month or so, it's been very active. So to get there, you just type into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. I offer an audio stream of Glen Oaks repeater of this TechNet and what goes on the rest of the days. So if you have no radio or no antenna and you still want to hear what's going on at Glen Oaks and you have an internet access, then type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com and that'll do that. Also, I always want to remind people, Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive of these technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006. His site is amateurradio.tv. He has over 1 million visitors, so make it 1,000,001. And, of course, I want to remind you that if you hear anything weird that doesn't belong here, the email address to inform is rfi@limark.org. Tell people what time you heard it, what time it stopped, what was the signal strength, if you know what the direction might have been, to help people out. Anyway, let me drop, and I will come back and tell you what I have planned for tonight. Okay, it's going to be a routine, relative routine night, this being our Mother's Day edition of the Limark Technical Net. I will ask for any questions. Hopefully the first few questions will be amateur radio related and relatively self-contained. As time goes on, we'll broaden it to any kind of a science question. And even include medicine if anyone's interested. We do not treat or diagnose over the radio, but we can discuss different aspects of science as you wish. That'll take us hopefully to 10:15 with Paul. WS2ED will give us the SpaceNet report. That'll take us to 11 p.m. and I will return to put a bow on it all and wish you a good week and close the net. That's my plan, if the laws of nature, physics, and what have you let me get away with it. So with that in mind, if there's anyone out there who has any questions or topics, hopefully regarding amateur radio, please give me your first name and your call sign.
I'm UKW.
Kitty
32UAH, Rocco.
Okay, Rocco recognized N2KW. What's your first name, sir?
Hi, good evening. My name is Alan. I'm in Bayside. And I have a real easy question. I put a NMO antenna on my car, and it's resonant too high in frequency, and I can't get a longer whip. I wonder if I can drop ferrite over the whip to bring it into resonance. Over.
Wow, that's a novel approach. My guess is the amount of impedance that you would gain would not be sufficient for it to have a significant effect. I mean, I guess if you had a lot of ferrite, you might be able to electronically lengthen the mechanical length of the antenna. But I would imagine that wouldn't really work terribly well, because I can't recall anyone anywhere ever suggesting it or doing it or any pictures of it. I theoretically, you're quite correct. It would increase the inductance of a part of your antenna radiator and electronically lengthen it. But I think to such a small, diminutive degree that it would not be terribly effective.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I didn't know. I've got about 18 inches of whip, and I need over 19, probably 19 and a half, but certainly 19, so I need another inch. And I can't braze it on, and I haven't got a source for material. So I'll figure it out. Thank you. N2KWF.
Okay. I mean, you could hook up a serial inductor at the base and kind of fudge something. I mean, if you do try the ferrite, I'd be incredibly interested in your results. I think you would probably need too much ferrite to make it efficiently electronically long enough. But it sounds interesting, so let us know how it worked out.
Okay. I will try it, because I need some cords to wind and unwind anyway. So, I have to meet the minimum postage requirement and all that. I'll get some little beats and see what happens. Thank you, N2KW.
Okay, very good, Alan. Let me continue asking if anyone wants to be put on the list, though. We'll get to you, Rocco. You're the next person on the list. Anyone else have any questions or topics for tonight? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
KB2NTB.
Okay, NTD recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, we'll give it one more try. Anyone out there want to put their name down on the list for any questions? We'll open it up for any science, medicine, what have you, on the list. Okay, hopefully later on more people will come with more questions or comments. I do have, not a puzzle, but an interesting story that I've been talking about for a month that I've never get to. So maybe we'll do that as well. So Rocco, KD2UAH, what's the question or comment or topic for tonight?
Thank you, Roy, KD2UAH. So it relates to a problem that I mentioned, maybe a month and a half ago, about my 9700. And the other day I was talking to Andy, WA2CDL, I don't know if he's listening, but we both got to our destinations at the same time, and he owns the same radio. I'll let it drop. So my 9700, I'm going to use our frequency 146.85 for the club. That's just an example. My radio will transmit into the repeater with the proper offset 146.2. I can hear it on another radio that it's transmitting properly. But the radio now is deaf on all the frequencies received. Yes, I've tried the tone squelch, no tone squelch. And here's the interesting thing. I'll let it drop again. I further experimented, and I tried transmitting simplex on my radio to an HT and talking back to the radio on the same HT on a simplex frequency, and it hears and transmits just fine. If I set the radio to 146.25, it will hear the transmission, and it receives just fine. If I transmit into 146.25 with an HT, it just won't receive on 146.85. So I'll let it drop again before I end. So the thing is, it transmits just fine because everybody will hear full quieting when I transmit 146.25 with the offset from 146.85. But the radio doesn't hear anything on the repeater frequency. It will hear simplex, it will transmit simplex, but it just does not hear the 146.85. And I'm kind of stumped, and you know, sending it back to Icon and packing everything is going to cost me some money, and I was just hoping maybe, I did a full reset by the way, I was hoping that maybe Andy, if he's listening, or anybody else might have an idea of where in the radio something could have gone haywire. Back to the net, KD2UAH. Thank you, Ruth.
Y2H.
Yes, Lou.
Okay, if he's on the, you know, PL or CTCSS decode, our PL frequency is different on the output than on the input. So that might be the issue. Is it all repeaters or first?
I have it set. I know it's 136.5 to transmit, 127.3 if you want to receive. I've even set it to no tone squelch, you know, to keep it open. No change. Back to you.
All right. I'm wondering, and the offset, of course, is 600 KC. I mean, it almost sounds like it could be some setting. It's definitely receiving 600 up, I guess, right?
Yes, Lou, it is. And, you know, I'm familiar with all the tones. The only thing I could find in the manual was that you want to reset the PBT, passband tuning, which I did. I held the menu button down and reset it. I did a full reset, actually, and it's still the same problem. But what was new was that I tried transmitting and receiving on simplex, and it receives and transmits on simplex. So it has something to do, maybe it's inside the radio on the circuit board or something's gone bad, but it has a problem. And I never did it before. I have it about a year. Back to the net.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering if there's a firmware update. And again, one last question. Is it on any repeater that's offset? You only can work simplex, any repeaters? No repeater would work?
That's correct. No repeater would work on 2 meters or 70. I haven't tried anything on the 1200 band. But yeah, on both 2 meters and 70, same thing. Only works on simplex. And as I said, I have the radio about a year. I never seem to have had that problem, and I don't think I changed any settings. I actually programmed it from the RT systems. So, I mean, I think everything is clicked off properly. It's just a very odd quirk. I might have to just send it back to ICOM, which, as I said, I really didn't want to do. Back to the net.
AC2GS. So that's a curious one. I'm thinking maybe there's something screwy with it that when it detects a PL tone, because the big question I have in my mind is the only difference between you sending a simplex signal into 146.850 and the repeater sending its signal is that the repeater will put a subaudible tone, which is supposed to operate as a squelch. But, you know, is it possible that the radio somehow is getting deeply confused by the subaudible tone and muting the whole audio entirely despite what it's set to do? Because, I mean, as far as I can think, the difference between a simplex on frequency and the repeater on frequency is just the PL tone.
Signal strength.
Well, yeah, I guess so, but I mean, if he could pick up other signals that are simplex, can you, Rocco? Is it possible that it's just a very, very low gain front end or something, that you need a very strong signal to get any kind of signal through the radio?
I don't think so, Ray, because I've checked the antennas, and right now I have my Yaesu on the same antenna, and, you know, clearly I can hear you and you can hear me just fine, I guess. But, yeah, I don't understand it, because it almost seems to me like something inside the radio is just not, you know, maybe it's in the circuitry or something, it's just not, you know, picking up the transmission back from the repeater. It transmits, if I put, you know, 1.14685 with a 0.6 offset, I see when I click the mic, it'll click down to 1.4625, and people on the club frequency have told me that I got full quieting. And the only reason I can hear them back is because I've got the HD plugged into my ear, so I hear their, you know, callback. I just don't hear it on the 9700. It's completely muted.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Your problem is definitely not in your transmitter and probably not in your antenna. But as someone kind of mentioned, I guess theoretically, what I would need to know is, have you listened for any simplex transmissions locally that, you know, 146.520, not ones that you yourself generated nearby? Because it could be, as the other guy kind of opinion opined, that what might be happening is there might be a malfunction in the receiver sensitivity itself, so that it's just not picking up received signals. But if you kind of shoehorn them with a handy talkie that's a couple of yards away from your antenna, that's much higher power, so it might jump into the front end, whereas a more distant signal might not. So have you listened for any other simplex of transmissions in your area?
KD2UAH, Randy. No, I haven't. I don't even know if anybody transmits. I'm down in Long Beach, and I don't know if anybody transmits anybody locally anyway on a simplex. I know the range isn't that far, but I've tried to scan the band with my other radios, and no, I haven't really caught anybody on other than repeater frequencies. So I don't know if any of you folks know of any simplex frequencies that are active in my area. I'd appreciate it. Back to the net.
Well, I mean, the best frequency to try is the universal calling frequency, 146.520. If there's any kind of simplex action on FM in your area, someone's going to use that first. Sometimes they just hog the frequency, which isn't really correct etiquette. You're supposed to make initial contact and then move off of it to another simplex frequency, but a lot of people don't. But yeah, as the other person, I didn't catch their ID. It could be something as simple as something that's kind of brought the gain of your front-end receiver stage all the way down, and you just have to throw way too many watts at it that it's not getting from repeaters. That would explain why the repeater output isn't getting to you, but your local handy-talkie might. So it's a shame you don't have any good equipment to supply different amounts of signal strength and see how your radio would kind of respond to that.
And 2KW?
Yes, Alan.
I wonder if you can open up the squelch and hear fried eggs, hear noise. Maybe the squelch is closed too tight.
Yeah, no, thank you. I didn't catch your call, but back to the net. You know, I tried that. And if I open up the squelch all the way, you know, I hear the static noise sound. Yeah, it's not quiet. You hear the squelch.
But not the repeater.
Correct, not the repeater. The repeater doesn't come through. It's almost as if the radio's deaf. But yet, as I said, if I had the squelch open and I transmitted to it on a random simplex frequency for my HT, it'll pick it up.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
So I'm curious, when you open it up and you hear white noise on the repeater frequency, and the repeater comes on, do you get quieting, or you still get the noise?
Lou, I still get the noise. it becomes quiet when I hit it with the HT on a simplex frequency, but when I hit our repeater and any other repeater, this repeater and all the others, it's the same thing. Just white noise. As a matter of fact, if I were to turn it on right now, I don't have it next to me though, but I would only hear white noise.
So if you listen to H5, but you're in repeat mode, you won't hear the machine, you'll hear white noise and it won't go away. However, if you're in simplex mode, you will hear the repeater, is that correct?
That is correct.
Wait a second, because I may have misunderstood something. Let me see if I have it.
All right, let me just say, I think it's, yeah, the offset. Something when you're in repeater mode, yeah, it's not offsetting the frequency properly. There's something wrong there.
Yeah, that's what I can't figure out, but I do have, as I said, I even went back to the RT systems programming software, and I've got the, you know, the transmit as 14625. I've got the receive as, you know, I mean, the transmit 14625 and receive 14685, and I have the point six plus or minus set properly on all the frequencies I got in. But if I were to tune the radio to 14625, I will hear the transmission back, which is very odd. It's almost as if they're broadcasting to that frequency, and now I'm getting that frequency. It's not flipping back to the proper receive frequency. I'll let it drop. Thank you, Lou.
Okay, once again, let me see if I have the repeater. Okay. I'm a little confused. I thought what was going on was that when you use the handy talkie to transmit on the frequency 146.850, it goes through. But there's no setting that you can do the radio where you can hear the repeater on your 9700. Did I get that wrong?
No, Roy, I think I may have mis-explained it. Now, the radio will not hear anything on 146.850. What it will hear is it will hear on 146.250 at most of the time. And if I pick a random frequency, like even the call frequencies, you know, the 5.2 frequency, I can transmit from the 9700 to the HT, and when I transmit from the HT to the 9700 on that simplex frequency, the 9700 will also hear it. So it has to do with the received frequencies off of a repeater.
Okay, that's very, very weird. And you already went to a factory reset. Is there any option to update firmware? Maybe, you know, before you pack it up and send it away, you might want to try a Hail Mary of installing the latest, greatest firmware update and hope for the best.
I will try that, Roy, because I thought there was another new firmware update coming up. I know some people had problems with the last firmware update, but right now it is up to date as of about a month ago. I think they were coming out with another fix, another software update. I know they've had some drift problems on that radio, but mine didn't seem to have that. So I think there might be something in the front end that's just gone crazy. Again, I'm not an electrical engineer or any kind of engineer, so, you know, I'm not that versed, you know, in the layout of a radio. But anyway, this is KD2UAH. Back to that. I don't want to take up any more time. There's probably other guys with questions. Maybe if Andy can reach out to me at some point, or I can meet him on the radio. He has the same radio, so he might be familiar with, you know, the electronic repair section. Thank you.
And Y2H.
Yes, Lou.
All right, one last test. I don't know if you tried this or not. So my working theory is that even though it says 14685, it hasn't flipped. It's still listening to 25. So have you tried taking the HT, transmitting on 25 while your 9700 is in repeater mode, thinking it's listening to 85, and do you hear the 25 transmissions there? That would show that it's not translating up 600. It's just hanging there, despite what the display might say.
Well, thanks, Luke. No, I haven't tried that, but I did try is if I transmit to 14625, you know, with the, let's say, the offset on my radio. So So my radio, my HT, I have it as 85. When I click it, it transmits to 25. The radio will hear it, the 97 will hear it if it's set to 25. If it's set to 85, it won't hear it.
Right, so again, does that mean that it hears it when you're in simplex mode, but doesn't hear it when you're in repeat mode? Are we still consistent with that?
Yes, Lou, we are.
Okay, just for kicks, I would try that. Even though it says 85, put in repeat mode, you know, 2585, on receive, it's listening on 85. Take your HT, transmit on 25, and see if you're hearing it. And that'll say that it's not transitioning between transmit and receive. It's not, you know, doing the 600 KC hop. All right, I'll be clear. NY2H.
Well, thank you very much, Lou, and thank you very much, as always, to everyone else in the net. I appreciate it. This is KD2UAH, and I'll be back on the side. If anything changes, I'll report back to the group. Thank you very much. I'll be on the side.
K2SCP Mobile.
Yes, Chris.
Just quickly to that gentleman, I also have that radio. I'm curious if you see anything on the scope when you don't hear anything. I'm assuming you see nothing on the scope as well, because you would see that scope light up with the offset if the radio is somehow on the wrong frequency. But my suggestion is to absolutely reload the firmware, whatever version you have, it doesn't matter. Just reload it. Maybe the firmware got a little wonky when it got loaded. I would try that first before you do anything. K2SBT.
Okay, K2SBT, thank you very much. I will try that. Anything not to have to pack the thing back up. Thank you very much for that suggestion. KD2UAH Mobile, thank you. Back to the net. I'm clear.
Okay, very good. I wish you luck, Rocco. Let us know how it all turns out. Yeah, when in doubt, always try a factory reboot. If the factory reboot doesn't work and you're able to upload the firmware, even if it's the same firmware that you have, because you never know when some of these curious little gamma rays are going to flip a bit in your circuit and have it do rather peculiar things. I've had that happen to me in the past. So keep that all in mind. Very good. Next on our list is KB2NTD. What's your question, topic, or comment for tonight? What's your first name, by the way?
Yeah, KB2NTD. First name here is Max in Rockland County. And just a quick question, Roy, or anybody else that might give me an opinion, you just let me know. Okay, I want to put a small 4-inch fan behind my HF rig to try to pull some of the heat away from it. Which way would you suggest facing the fan? Blow room air into the rig, or to turn it around as an exhaust to pull air out of the rig? Which way would be more efficient?
And 2KW.
Yes, Alan?
Absolutely put the fan on top of the rig and blow the heat up.
Saying blow the heat up, suck the air out of the rig. It's actually the vents are mainly in the back of the rig.
Well, if the vents are in the back of the rig, then put it away from the vents. Suck the air out of the radio.
Okay. All right. Just wasn't sure which way would be more beneficial, to try to cool it by blowing cool air in or suck the heat out. I kind of thought what you were telling me to do was the right way. I do appreciate it, KD2NTD.
If I can inject a bit of levity about the factory reset.
Yeah, sure, Alan.
Okay, remember, this is a joke. There's three guys who carpooled together. There's a chemical engineer, an electrical engineer, and an IT specialist. And their car breaks down. The chemical engineer says, I know what we have to do. We have to empty the gas and put in fresh gas. The gas is contaminated. And the electrical engineer says, before we go through all that, don't you think we ought to check and see if we have spark? Let me let it drop. The IT specialist says, you're both doing it the hard way. He says, what we got to do is we got to close all the windows, and then when we open the windows, everything will be fine.
Okay, Alan, I hope everyone got the point. I'll give you a little 2 cents worth of Googling, because theoretically, you can cool something down. What basically you're asking, Max, is you want to cool the heatsink bits in the most efficient manner. And for the most part, I might be wrong, but I assume there's no real intake filter for the inside of the chassis, so it's really dissipating the heatsink. So as long as you run air through the fins of the heatsink as efficiently as possible, that probably is going to give you the best amount of cooling. So it depends upon the way that the heatsinks are oriented. You want the biggest amount of cubic inches, cubic feet per second, per minute, running through your fins and just blowing the hot air between the fin elements outside of the area of the chassis.
Okay, so back to that. So we want to pull, we want to have the fin, shall we say, unexhausted, pull the heat away rather than blow air in.
Yeah, well, again, it sort of depends upon the design of your radio. My radios that have heat sinks are kind of pretty much sealed situations, except for connections and such, so there's no real way of sucking air out of the chassis box and in. What you're really doing is you're blowing cold air across the heat sink fin and dissipating the heat that's coming off of the heatsink. So theoretically, you could suck it, you could blow it. It's not going to make that much of a difference as far as I could perceive it for those types of situations. The important point is to have the biggest amount of air exchange running through those fins. In other words, if you have fins that are horizontally oriented and you have a fan blowing in the vertical direction, you're not going to get as much dissipation as you would if you put them in the same orientation. So I think that's a lot more important than whether it sucks or blows.
And 2KW.
Yes, Alex.
Yeah, I've never seen cooling fins horizontal. They're always vertical. But if you suck air out, you don't risk the situation of trapping hot air in.
Well, again, it sort of depends upon whether you can even get into the chassis. Most of mine are kind of sealed against that. So if you blow air into or suck air out of a chassis, it's not going to do much. It's really just the fins that are getting dissipated. Most articles, if you look it up, actually mention that blowing air into it is preferable to cool the components. That's assuming that you have some kind of open box, but they caution that you should put a filter on it because you don't want to blow dust into your chassis. But I think I could be wrong for Max's particular unit. My unit is pretty much sealed, and I agree with you. They tend to be horizontal, so rather I would think that actually having something that would direct the air in that orientation is more important than if it was sucking or blowing, personally. But if you take a horizontal fin and you suck air from the top up, it's not going to really go through the fins that much. Secondarily, as you develop a low pressure zone, you'll get some of that secondarily. So it just, I think orientation is something to keep in mind when you're trying to cool the heat sink.
KB2SCD. Yeah, this is a 756 Pro 3, if anybody is familiar with that. And the slots are vertical in the back. They're up and down. And that's where the heat comes out.
Oh, okay, so that makes it easy. You could put it on the top of the bottom and orient it parallel to the fin. I don't think it really makes a heck of a lot of difference whether you're sucking or you're blowing, because it's just the amount of air that you're passing through those fins. If you're blowing it directly, it's cold air. If you're sucking it and there isn't hot equipment all over it, it's going to be cold air.
And 2KW?
Yes, Alan.
Yeah, I say again, I've never seen horizontal fins. But, you know, in the case of vertical fins, it doesn't matter if the fan is on top or on bottom. But it certainly matters which way it's blowing. The air has got to blow up because heat rises.
Okay. Theoretically, yeah. You can do it that way. Again, it depends. And I'm sure I saw horizontal fins on heat sinks. Unfortunately, I can't get to the back of my my radios right now this very minute without probably electrocuting myself. But yeah, heat does rise. But, you know, for small, short areas, if you blow it down, it's not really going to make that much of a difference. You're only talking about a couple of square inch of effective surface area.
It can make a very big difference, because if you blow it down, you're trapping the hot air.
I'm not quite sure that you're trapping the hot air. I mean, if you have an enclosed space, maybe, but if it's an open heat sink, then it's just going to go off to the sides and rise up. So, again, not quite sure. He can try different configurations. I've tried different configurations, and most times if you got the amount of cubic inches per minute right, that's an important thing. I've had computer chassis where some of the computer fans are designed to suck and others are designed to blow because they want to get a current through the inside of it.
Okay. My HT is getting hot, so I'm going to let it cool off. I'm 2KW.
KB2NTZ, yep. Thanks for all the information, guys. I
appreciate it. Okay, very good, Max. Thank you for participating. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Limar Technical Net. Anyone out there have any questions or topic for discussion, please hit that push-to-talk button. Give us your first name and your call sign.
Rich.
Hey, good evening, Rich. What's your question or topic for tonight?
The identifier covered you up, Roy, on the last few words. Let me see if I have it, and can I ask a question now or be put on the list?
You're the next guy on the list, Rich. Ask away.
Okay, can the difference between a quarter wave and a half wave and a full wave antenna be measured in S units at all? The improvement going from, let's say, a half wave antenna to a full wave antenna, can that be measured in how much gain the person on the other side would hear? Go ahead.
Well, in my humble opinion, no. A half wave antenna, an NFED half wave antenna, does not necessarily have any greater efficiency than a quarter wave with a counterpoise. So the simple answer is no. Otherwise, people would just build the longest possible antenna. Now, there are ways around that. You can set up multiple antennas, linear, stacked antennas, and they will provide a greater output gain. But the total output will be about the same. You might end up with a better signal. But that would be four stacked arrays of separate antennas, not four simply using odd multiples of half wave and such, say, you know, going from a half wave dipole to a three half wave dipole and such. That won't give you improved output.
So you're saying that the performance of a half wave or a quarter wave antenna could match the performance of a half wave antenna?
That's 2kW.
Yes, Alan recognized. One second. In some cases, you will get better output from, say, a quarter wave with a good ground plane than you will a half wave NFET, you know, depending upon the balun used, the efficiency, and whether you have proper grounding and such. But Alan, your comment?
Okay, I believe the question was about vertical antennas, not dipoles, because certainly three half waves, 3 dB over one half wave, but in dipoles. But I think the question was about verticals, and you're correct. There's no difference in the signal between a half wave and a quarter wave vertical. The only difference is the quarter wave requires a ground and the half wave doesn't require a ground. The 5/8 wave fires at a slightly lower angle. So if somebody's 20 miles out, you might be stronger on the 5/8 wave. But if somebody's 5 miles away, they're not going to hear any difference between that and the quarter wave. Over.
Yeah, but I think what we should clarify for people listening is we're talking more about the radiation pattern changes as you change the length of the radiator. The amount of energy being emitted, the efficiency of a given antenna, doesn't necessarily change. It's the same total amount of energy being thrown out as RF. There are some designs where you have a more isotropic distribution and others where you have a more focused distribution. But the total output remains pretty much the same as long as it's a relatively efficient design.
Yes. Agreed. But what I was saying is for a quarter wave and for a half wave, the pattern is virtually identical. For a 5/8 wave, it's squished a little bit more towards the horizon. So if you're distant, the 5/8 wave might appear to be a bit stronger. But close in, they're all going to be the same.
Okay, so we were basically in agreement because Rich wasn't mentioning 5/8. He was kind of talking, I think, about whether increasing the length of the radiator increases the efficiency of the radiator, which it shouldn't, according to laws of physics. And in some ways, depending upon the balun that you use for an NFET half wave, if it's not well designed, can cause a decreased efficiency for the total amount of radiated energy.
That's exactly what the question was, Roy. Just like you put it now. Why on a vertical? And I was also talking about dipoles also, or asking the question about the length of a dipole. But with the verticals, why going to a half wave? Why does that do away with the need for ground planes?
And 2kW.
Okay, Alan recognized. Let me put my 2 cents in, and then you're more than free to put your 2 cents in. The way I like to describe this is, think of one of the relatively simplest antennas in the world, a center-fed half-wave dipole. Now, at the center position, you have the lowest input impedance of about 50 ohms. You can slide it off center. There's nothing in the laws of physics that says that a dipole has to be equidistant on both sides. That's just the point that has the lowest impedance. You can slide it off center. And as you slide it off center, it develops a higher and higher impedance. You can slide it all the way to one end, and theoretically, you would have an infinite impedance. But because we live in a real world and not a theoretical one, the practical impedance at the very edge of a connected half-wave dipole is about 2,000-3,000 ohms of impedance. You then have a 49-to-1 balun that will transform it closer to your 50-ohm impedance. You might have an antenna tuner to make up for the slack. And that way you get away without needing a counterpoise because it's really a very off-center dipole, not a, monopole. It ends up being a monopole, we call it a monopole, but the way it sort of works is as though it was actually a very, very off-center dipole. Alan, you want to comment?
Yeah, I misunderstood the question. I thought the question was why does the half-wave vertical require less of a ground system than a quarter-wave vertical? And I don't understand what dipoles have to do with that.
It's because that's the best way that I personally found to explain to people that you don't need a counterpoise when it's a half-wave. When it's not a half wave, then you need some kind of a counterpoise. But if you operate it in a half a wavelength length, it acts just like a very, very, very off-center half-wave dipole with the same characteristic high impedance that needs to be matched with the balun.
Yeah, well, okay. I just don't like the word dipole in there. That's all. This radio is getting hot. There's something wrong. The half wave, the infrared half wave, the half wave vertical is voltage feed, and it's high impedance and doesn't require a ground. The quarter wave vertical, you need a half wave. So you're making the other quarter wave up to make a half wave. You're making the quarter wave up in your ground system. Your counterpoise, over.
Okay, and I agree with you, but you're not really giving anyone anything to conceptually understand. You're just giving rules. Whereas, I mean, you will. I know the use of dipoles annoys people, and it even annoys me because I'm just using that as a way of understanding why the impedances are going up, because you will admit that an off-center dipole does build up a higher impedance the farther off-center it gets. So to me, conceptually, that will explain the high impedance. It'll explain the lack of need for a counterpoise, whereas your explanation was just a description that it has a high impedance and that it doesn't need a counterpoise. So I personally tend to find this explanation that I've been using for years to be better because I feel that people get a somewhat understanding of why these things are the way they are rather than just kind of someone came off of a mountain with some stone tablets explaining that this is the way it is type of stuff.
Now, Roy, you're talking about a 49-to-1. How come that's a very popular balun or transformer? I still don't know which is the correct term. But what about, you know, like a 43-to-1? Would something like a 43-to-1 be called for depending on how off-center the dipole is?
Well, I mean, theoretically, you can tweak different balance to match different impedances. The reason why 49 is not an arbitrary number, it's a square. And a lot of these, 1-to-9 is a 3-to-1 square transformers in a balun, and 49 is a square, and all these numbers you'll notice are squares. So most likely no one's going to build some real esoteric transformer balun that's a non-square reduction or increase. They'll use an antenna tuner to tweak it as they need. Usually when you hear people talk about balans like 49 to 1, it is for use as a half-wave balun. Other people will use a N-fed wire as a random wire, where a lot of times they're operating not at half a wavelength, so the impedance at the edge is lower than it would be if it was a true half wave. So they usually go with something like a 9-to-1 transformer balun, and then they correct the rest of it through an antenna tuner.
I'm going to ask a question which will embarrass myself, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Physically, in terms of physics, how is, I forgot how many turns on the 49-to-1, but physically, how is that nullifying the impedance? What is it actually doing? How does it, interact with the ferrite core? To reduce that impedance.
And 2KW.
Okay, Alan recognized once again. It works in a very similar way to any transformer. Transformers will either increase, step up, or step down the input voltage based upon the turn ratios of the primary and the secondary. And so you're just effectively using the same mechanism. The balun has a, for a 9-to-1 has a 1 turn, or 1x, and 3x as on the other, and it'll just step up or step down different values, including impedance. So that's what transformers do. They step up and down impedances. They step up and down voltage potential. Alan, what did you want to say?
You started out with the exact words I was going to use. It's just like any other transformer. But I was going to go into a little bit more detail. When you pass AC through a wire, and that wire passes through a magnetic core, it makes an electromagnet. And when the lines of force cut across another wire, it induces a voltage in the other wire. And the voltage that's induced is the square of the ratio between the turns. And that's any transformer. And ferrite cores are no different. Over.
Okay, very good, Alan. And to Rich, the term, the ratio difference between the primary and the secondary for a 49-to-1 is 7, because 7 times 7 is 49. So, again, as I mentioned, as Alan just mentioned, that's the way that transformers transform. It's not anything particularly special. They don't negate impedance. They basically kind of divide it. Well, or you just kind of go back to the same line. They transform it by a certain ratio. For our 49-to-1 is that they bring it down to 1/49th of what the input impedance is.
And my last question is, a lot of times they employ a capacitor across the balun, and what power is, I guess that's to bleed off the rest of the voltage, would that be correct?
Well, the explanation for how balans actually work is kind of complex, at least to me. I have bought books on the subject, and the designs are fascinating, but to me confusing. So if there are electrical engineers out there who are knee-deep into balun design and have a good answer for what the additional capacitances in the balance that we use R for, other than just serving to transform a balance to an unbalanced line and what have you, then please feel free. I don't think the capacitors are involved in the impedance transformation. I think they're more involved in the manipulation of turning an unbalanced circuit to a balanced circuit. But if there's anyone out there who has a good way of explaining it, please feel free.
I think you're doing an excellent job all by yourself, WA2VFM.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. I just thought, we have some very clever electrical engineers out there, and I might learn something as well.
Well, I don't want to interrupt your cue, so, but I am in awe listening to you guys. I always like to learn, and certainly a lot to learn right here. So go ahead. Please don't let me interfere with the cue, so, and we'll just be listening and learning, WA2VFM.
And true KW.
Hello, Alan. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. And hello, Stu. What you said made a whole lot of sense before, that the RF has got to go somewhere. And I know a lot of people say if you don't use a balun, you're going to get a skewed pattern, you're not going to get a clean antenna pattern. But, maybe that's not so important, because the RF is still going to go somewhere. What you don't want is you don't want RF in your shack. And the way I get around that is I take a 2-liter soda bottle and I wrap some coax around it to make an RF choke. And then the current won't come down the coax and into my shack. Ugly balance. But let me let it drop and say one more thing. HF antennas, too many people have a dipole mentality, and any horizontally polarized antenna doesn't begin to work unless you can get it up a half wavelength, and people put up their dipole at low heights and they expect it to work, and then they're disappointed. Instead, they should use a vertical, and all verticals are noisy, and they need radials. Comet makes a wonderful antenna that handles 250 watts. CHA 250B. You can strap it to your chimney and save yourself a whole lot of trouble. N2KW.
Yeah, I've looked into models similar to that one. It bothers me that it too has a balun, if I remember correctly. And that balun has resistors in it, and also I've seen images where they throw a thermal gun on it, and it dissipates a significant amount of heat, which kind of concerns me. I think they're doing the way they're kind of getting around the impedance and non-resonance mismatches are by decreasing the amount of reflection by loss at the balun. I could be wrong. I never owned one, but I've read more than a few articles on that group of a particular antenna. I mean, there's no perfect antenna, unless you're a billionaire and you can get stacked arrays of dipoles studded all over a couple of acres. So they all have pluses. They all have minuses. I agree with you. We have had cases where people basically put up way too low-frequency verticals very close to the ground, and they wonder why they seem to have a near-vertical incident sky wave on their hands.
Yeah, I think you meant low dipoles. Yes, NGIS antennas, absolutely. I've done a lot of work with an indoor setup where I'm limited to 20 feet above the earth, and dipoles just don't work at that height. But I've done wonderful things from the attic with a mag loop, and I really know mag loops. The antennas talk to me. And let me let it drop, and I'll make a comment about that. Despite all my success with mag loops, somebody turned off my club and said, "Oh, those aren't anything new. Why, you lose half your power and heat." And everybody got disinterested. Nobody realizes that half your power is only 3 dB.
Well, yes, that's quite true. And to some people, they say that...